May it please the court. Andrew Poland, registration number 44441, on behalf of the respondent mother. Also seated at council's table is Mr. Bob Lubowitz on behalf of the respondent father, and Mr. Scott Poland on behalf of the respondent mother. The issue before the court today is whether the summary judgment standard of no issue of material fact can be satisfied when the adjudication is based exclusively on a theory of prospective harm. The issue to be resolved is narrow, and I believe the facts in this case are extremely unique. I would like to start by first addressing the first issue presented in the court's request for supplemental briefing. After assessing the facts in this case very briefly, I would like to ask the court to find that the department has relied exclusively on a theory of prospective harm in this case. Again, very briefly summarizing the facts, the minor child in this case was born May 25th. The petition in dependency and neglect was filed 4 days after the child's birth. The termination of the parental rights as to the minor children in case 11JV114 occurred on May 31st, 2 days after the petition was filed. The motion for summary judgment as to the child SN was then filed on June 20th, 2012, only 26 days after the child's birth. The factual basis provided in the department's motion for summary judgment exclusively relied on the respondent's behavior in 11JV114. No new facts were presented in regards to the parent's behavior between when the child was born and when the motion for summary judgment was filed. Again, no new facts were presented in regards to the parent's conduct at the hospital immediately after the child was born. Again, the trial court in issuing its ruling granting the people's motion for summary judgment states the people assert they are relying entirely on a theory of prospective harm. The court then proceeds to analyze the case under that assumption. The court did not analyze the parent's conduct as it related to the minor child SN in any way. Once the department made that assertion, it then speculated on how the parent's behavior in the 11JV114 case could potentially pose a threat to the child SN in the future. Based on those facts, I would ask the court today to find that the department's theory of this case was exclusively prospective harm to the child. The second issue raised in the court's request for supplemental briefing is whether or not the summary judgment standard of no issue of material fact can be satisfied when the theory of the case is exclusively prospective harm to the child. It is our position that under the stringent summary judgment standard, this burden cannot be met. Now, I believe there are several factors the court should consider today in considering whether or not this standard can be met. And I'd like to begin by first discussing In the Interest of Baby Girl S, which is actually a New York State case, but it was a case that was cited numerous times in the people's supplemental brief. Again, as a preliminary matter, this is a New York State case and, of course, is not binding on this case. However, I do believe the factual circumstances of that case are similar. However, I believe the principles that are relied on in that case are not persuasive, and I don't believe the present case has those principles that are relevant. And so I'd like to focus on the two considerations I believe the court considered when rendering that decision. The first is in regards to the preservation of judicial resources. The second concerns the temporal proximity of the facts relied on in the motion for summary judgment. So these are the facts relied on in the prior case as they relate to the afterborn child.
Counsel, are there any facts in the record that would support the proposition that the parents would treat this child any different than the six children who previously had been neglected?
Well, again, since the entire factual basis for this motion for summary judgment concerned the parents' conduct up till the date of that termination, there is no facts in regards. And
no, I'm sorry. I understand your premise that because it's prospective, it's a non-starter, but I want to go beyond that if I can. So my question is, did you present any evidence that would indicate that the parents would treat this child any differently than the six children who previously had been neglected?
Yes, there was a response filed in regards to the motion for summary judgment, which contained an affidavit signed by the respondent mother.
Which had only very conclusory statements, most of which contradicted directly the findings that had been made in the prior proceeding and had been affirmed on appeal.
I mean, again, it was a very short time frame, so I believe what could be shown within that time frame was limited. However, I believe that affidavit supported the position that the mom wanted to make changes based on the prior termination as to the three other children.
So Mr. the only Poland. Evidence was that her speculation that maybe she'll do better this time.
Yes, I believe in some respect that is correct.
How likely is prospective harm?
I believe it's just complete speculation. I really believe it's speculation at the most base level. I don't think that you could put a specific probability as to the potential for harm for these children. I think it's just you looking at the past and then absolutely speculating as to the future.
And how would you define prospective harm?
Prospective harm is, I believe, an assessment of past actions of another and then making an assessment as to what those actions could have in the future. But I believe there's a lot of unanswered questions with that assessment. You know, you can't just look at how they did in the past and then make a reasonable assessment as to what the prospective harm could be in the future.
Mr. Pullen, don't courts regularly rely upon prospective conduct in deciding whether to terminate a parent's rights?
Well, I think termination at a hearing could absolutely, and I think case law in Colorado has stated that prospective harm should be a consideration. I mean, the fact that a child could be in a dangerous situation in the future should be something a trier of fact decides. In regards to the more stringent summary judgment, no issue of material facts standard, I think it's a higher burden, and you can't rely on speculation. And I think what's essential to this case is that there needs to be a present assessment of those parents. And that's why at a termination hearing, at an adjudicatory trial, even if the parent is sitting in that courtroom, that trier of fact can assess that parent. And when you're relying exclusively on facts from the past, then you're speculating as to what has changed, you know, since that time period ended.
Counsel, when the motion for summary judgment was filed, did either the mother or father file a Rule 56 affidavit explaining that they needed additional time in order to oppose the motion, setting specifically what they would do and asking for additional time?
They did not file anything okay. In that respect. If I could just have just one moment. Again, I want to focus very briefly in regards to the temporal proximity, the facts relied on in the people's motion for summary judgment. I think that was something that was presented as the termination order was signed on this date, 2 days after this child was born. Therefore, these facts are temporally proximate to the birth of the child SN. And I think after a closer analysis of the facts presented in the motion for summary judgment, it's apparent that many of those facts, I would say more than half of those facts, related to conduct that occurred at the outset of that case, which was 15 months prior to when this child was born. So in considering the temporal proximity of these facts, I believe many of them relate to the start of the 11JB114 case.
Was that pointed out in the trial court?
That was not. Okay. But again, I think it's relevant today in making the determination as to whether the summary judgment standard can be satisfied when you're considering that many of the facts relied on in determining that there was no issue of material fact related to a period of time well in the past.
What's the standard of review for evaluating summary judgment?
I believe it's de novo. I don't have a case in front of me, and I did research that issue very briefly. I don't have a case citation in front of me, but I believe it would be subject to de novo review. With that, if there's no additional questions, I will reserve the remaining time for the respondent father's counsel. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pullen.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. Robert Lebowitz, registration number 5277, appearing on behalf of respondent father's matter, MAS. Friends, what I'm going to try to direct your attention toward is the repetition. In real estate, they say location, location, location. The experience that MAS and his wife had in this case is summary judgment termination, summary judgment termination, summary judgment termination. One of the, Your Honor,
there's only been one summary judgment in this case. Pardon? I'm only aware of one summary judgment in this case.
The termination of parental rights in the case involving three other children, it was a summary judgment at the adjudicatory stage. It's going to get confusing.
What happened in the first? I'm familiar with the scenario in this for the last three. What about the first three? How did that go?
The first three, my understanding from my client, this goes back to 2005, he was never given any notice of those hearings. That
okay.
There were decisions made without any indication or any knowledge on his part. He was in another state. The children had been with
so they were default determinations.
Yes. Okay. Yes. And I guess the problem that I have is what I raised the first day in front of Magistrate McLean in Boulder, where I said, we understand parental rights have been terminated. This was I think maybe mid July. Parental rights have been terminated in 11JV114. There's a new baby. It's a new case. All that we would ask for initially from the court is to view things in a perspective of the individual being capable of, rather than incapable, of taking care of this new child. That the focus needed to be initially from the department's perspective, guardian ad litem's perspective, and certainly ours as counsel for the parents, reunification. And Magistrate McLean said to us, I think Mr. Poland was present by phone, and I suggested that he represent the mom in that case. The magistrate said, we're going to do that. This is a new case. Essentially, we're not going to hold against these parents totally what happened in the 11JV114 case, and we want to give them an opportunity to show that in this particular situation, they can parent. And the problem that I have is they have never had the day in court. Since the original case was filed, we need to talk about the 11JV114. And I found it somewhat disingenuous that in the brief, in all respect to the county attorney from Boulder, they talk about rehashing the issues in 11JV114, but that's 90% of the brief. It's talking about what happened with the other three children.
Well, how do you define prospective harm?
Well, I think prospective harm is there needs to be more than a reasonable expectation that the conduct that was perceived in a past matter is likely to be completed again.
How likely?
In this particular case, Your Honor?
Well, or in general, either way.
Well, there's an old cliche about, Santayana, who said something about the best way to perceive how people are going to act in the future is to look at their past behavior. I think it's pretty speculative. I think that the whole issue of prospective harm, clearly there's case law or statute that prospective harm is appropriate in certain cases. Clearly, there is case law and statute that suggests that summary judgment is appropriate. Combining the two of these, as happened in the case regarding SN, is creating from the outset an almost insurmountable burden for either one of the parents, particularly my client, to overcome.
Counsel, they have an opportunity, don't they have a treatment plan? Excuse me for interrupting, but there's a treatment plan, and I assume, I don't know, and it's not within the record, but they have the opportunity in that context, don't they, to show that, yes, mother will get a psychological evaluation, yes, father will tend to his mental issues, and that they'll both work on some other issues that are identified in the treatment plan. They can be working on that. They're not being told they can't do that. So when you say they don't have any chance, it seems to me they have every opportunity to prove they're good parents.
And in all respect, I completely understand that. The problem is how quickly you know, I don't mean to use such cliches, but there's a knee-jerk reaction. Within a very short period of time, within 26 days, we're going to file motion for summary judgment based upon prospective harm, and the time within which the parents would have an opportunity is so curtailed, is so limited, that there wasn't anything.
Did you request additional time by way of the Rule 56 affidavit?
We did not, Your Honor, but I would say factually, and I believe this is in my original petition on appeal, my client had actually obtained employment with the Salvation Army through all of his own devices, no assistance, no help whatsoever from the department or anyone else for whatever reason. He did that on his own. He was working for a couple of months.
Is that in the record?
This is subsequent, yes, subsequent to...
It is in the record, you said?
It should be, yes, sir. It's in my brief.
You made the statement in your brief, but is there any evidence of that?
Well, I believe that the last hearing that we had in the Boulder court, we have one coming up next month, last hearing we had in the Boulder court, I indicated, as did my client, that he was employed at the time. So he made some progress, and while it may not seem such a drastic change, in the 11 JB 114 case, there's indication, well, MAS had to be escorted out of the building, he was irritated, he was aggravated, whatever. Subsequent to SN's birth, he was never escorted out of the building. He never had, during any visitation, which he was able to attend when it didn't conflict with work, he never had any occasion where they stopped the visitation, meaning the department, because there was some improper action or behavior in his part. I think that he was capable, my client was capable of changing. I think that all that he really wanted from day one was an opportunity for a day in court. And I understand that there was some time for him to show this, but that's not going to happen overnight. I think what happened with MAS is he was bearing the albatross, shall we say, around his neck of what happened with the other three children, and there was not a commitment initially from the department nor the guardian ad litem to look toward reunification. I think he was pretty damned the moment he got in, and what bothers me as an attorney is that certainly I think my responsibility is to try to uphold the integrity of the court, to present that to any clients that I may have, and to say they're going to be treated fairly. They were told subsequent to SN's birth there was going to be a jury trial. Never happened. Summary judgment. Prospective harm, gone. They were told that they were going to be given an opportunity to show that their ability could, that their conduct could change. They weren't given, he wasn't given that time. He wasn't given really any opportunity. And we would respect, I guess I'm almost done, we would be respectfully requesting that at the very least the court remand this case to the Boulder District Court for a full evidentiary hearing on the issue of whether the adjudication is appropriate and whether the standard can be met. I suggested when I first came on the case, and my client certainly asked me to do this. In Denver, we have offers of proof.
Mr. Lewis, yes. your time is up, sir.
Sorry, but I didn't realize the color. Thank you, Your Honor. Thank you.
May it please the court. Good afternoon, Your Honors. My name is Jean Judge, Colorado registration number 32482. While I believe that all the arguments set forth in the petitioner's supplemental brief are valid, I'm going to focus on what I believe is the heart of the issue at interest the court here today. Can a court make a summary judgment finding when a child's adjudication as dependent and neglected is based largely or wholly on prospective harm? And the answer is yes, it can.
Ms. Judge, it's pretty hard to have a dispute over material facts when there are no material facts in dispute.
Well, Your Honor,
because nothing's happened.
Well, and that would go to my argument, Your Honor, that a previous court has made the finding already that these parents are not fit. In fact, another branch, another division of the Court of Appeals upheld that these parents are not fit to parent.
As to a particular child, not as to this child.
It was, the finding, however, Your Honor, was done contemporaneously with the filing of the motion for summary judgment.
Can I interject? Just as Judge Graham is pointing out, with respect to this child, and we're at adjudication, and we're talking about prospective harm, that definition applies to this child in the adjudication stage. We're not talking about parental fitness at a termination.
And I'm so glad Your Honor brings that up, because to analyze the issue of prospective harm, I think you do have to answer the question of what is prospective harm.
Okay.
And essentially what prospective harm is a reasonable belief that a child will receive unsafe care in the future based on a parent's present or recent unfitness. You cannot separate the concept of unfitness with the concept of prospective harm. You can't have prospective harm without a showing that a parent is recently or presently not fit.
Then how about a hearing?
Your Honor, there is a standard in Colorado for summary judgment that if there's no genuine issue of material fact, then summary judgment is allowed in Colorado.
That's how we began this conversation.
The standard isn't higher, however, for dependency and neglect cases. Here, I believe that if you can show that there's no genuine issue of material fact, and I believe it's by a preponderance of the evidence, Your Honor, because adjudication in dependency and neglect cases are by a preponderance of the evidence standard. So I believe that the standard is that there's no genuine issue of material fact, that the parents are unfit, by a preponderance of the evidence. And if you can show that, then you should be allowed to get summary judgment in a dependency and neglect case.
You said unfit, and I'm going to take you back to your definition. Your definition said unsafe care in the future. So how likely is that?
If a parent is presently unfit, the Colorado courts have said that prospective harm is allowed in Colorado. So if a parent is presently unfit, and there's a definition of unfit in the statutes in Colorado. It's under 19.3604, subsection 2.
That's the termination statute.
It is, but it defines what unfitness is, and it's a clear and convincing standard. So it's a higher standard than adjudication, and what it says is that if a parent is unable to provide for the physical, mental, and emotional needs of a child, then that parent is unfit.
Okay, so
we have that here.
So once any court in any state makes a finding of unfitness and terminates parental rights, does that mean from then on that parent cannot parent? Is that what you're saying?
No, Your Honor. However, in this case, it was done contemporaneously with the filing of the motion for summary judgment.
With a different child?
With a different child, but Colorado courts have also been clear that you can look at other children, treatment of other children, in deciding whether or not a parent can be adjudicated with regard to another child.
But Colorado courts have frequently found parents unfit with respect to one of their children, but not with respect to the rest of their children.
Your Honor, in People in the Interest of DLR, it says that it has been repeatedly held that trial court may properly consider the treatment accorded other children in determining whether the child before it is neglected and dependent. And that's also upheld in People in the Interest of BW, People in the Interest of CR.
Well,
I'm
well aware of that, but my question, or perhaps a comment, went to something entirely different, and that is that simply because a parent is deemed to be unfit with respect to a child doesn't mean apodictically that they're unfit with respect to the other children.
The court may consider the treatment of the other
In a motion for summary judgment?
And in this, yes, in a motion for summary judgment, the rule isn't any different for summary judgment than in any other venue or context of the court or context of the children's code, Your Honor.
But that could be disputed. Let's say respondent father got a job. And let's say for some reason, as happens in families, the parents fall in love with this child unlike any other child they've ever had.
And I would quote...
It may be after a hearing you are entirely correct, but we're talking summary judgment where there's no dispute.
And I would say that in this particular case, the facts didn't show that. And people in the interest of DAK states that a child's situation on the day of a hearing cannot be viewed in a vacuum. The evidence of alleged instances of abuse and parental neglect relied upon to establish the child's dependency and neglect must, that's a must, be considered in the context of the child's history as well as a respondent parent's prior behavior. You must consider the respondent parent's prior behavior. In this case, it's notable that respondent mother was pregnant during the previous case, 11JV114, 9 months over the course of that case, where the parents refused to comply with any component of the treatment plan. So, Your Honors, they do have the opportunity to show that they are fit with the treatment plan, but at this point, there's already been a finding of the court, upheld by the Court of Appeals, that these parents are not fit. And so there's essentially no genuine issue of material fact that these parents are not fit. This is a newborn child. The other three children, one was 9, one was 3, and one was 1, at the time when the district court found that the parents were unfit. Not only that they were not fit, but they wouldn't be fit to parent within a reasonable period of time. And so now we're talking about a newborn child, not a 9-year-old, which is easier to parent, or a 3-year-old, but a newborn child.
So let's assume, for the sake of argument, I believe both parents asked for a jury trial. Let's say you try this in front of a jury, making all these arguments. Could it be that the jury disagrees with you?
Your Honor,
I mean, you were very persuasive, but could it be that the jury would disagree with you?
There's always a possibility in any case, ever before any court, that a jury could disagree somehow. But I would argue here that summary judgment is allowed in DNN cases, and the moving party must be entitled to summary judgment as a matter of law when the pleadings, affidavits, or admissions in the file show that there's no genuine issue of material fact. A moving party is entitled to that, and that's there's many cases about it. I can quote a case, but well, that's O.C. Kinney versus Paul Hardiman. But over and over again, people are entitled if there's no showing of a genuine issue of material fact. In this case, we have a finding contemporaneous with the petition filing here that these parents are not fit, a finding that was upheld by another division of the Court of Appeals. So essentially, in this particular case, there is no genuine issue of material fact that these parents are not able to provide for the physical, mental, and emotional needs of children. And going back to Justice Graham's question of, well, this is a different child, well, we need to look at the basis of the finding of unfitness in that case, in the previous case. And it was based upon respondent father's mental illness. It was based upon both parents' instability of life. It was based upon both parents' homelessness. It was based upon both parents' inadequate parenting skills, and their inability to, or unwillingness to engage in treatment. So that was the basis of the unfitness.
So it wasn't based on prospective harm?
I'm talking about
the prior.
The prior case.
Was those, not prospective harm?
No, it was over the course of a 15-month case, that termination order, the finding that they were unfit, and, oh, I see what you're saying. In this case, it wasn't based on prospective harm. Well, if you look at prospective harm as requiring that a parent be unfit, which I think it should, no, I think it's partially based on what one can expect in the future, but it's based upon the parent's present unfitness, no genuine issue of material fact. And if there's a finding that the parents cannot provide for the physical, mental, and emotional needs of a child at the present time, that is prospective harm.
Counsel, I want to go back to the definition you gave for prospective harm, and I think it started out by saying a reasonable belief the child will receive unsafe care in the future based on past or present unfitness. Is that, where did you get that?
From thinking about this case. Okay. for many, many months.
I'm sure you have.
But I've tried to think of any situation.
And I think it's a good definition, but here's what I'm pausing on. The word reasonable. Frequently, reasonable is a jury question. If you think about negligence cases and what have you. How does that fit with the summary judgment standard to say we're finding you're asking us to find as a matter of law that there is a reasonable belief, et cetera?
I am, Your Honor. I think this court, I think that this court is capable of doing that because, let's say you had a parent who had a IQ of 50. There's affidavits in an adjudication saying that this parent is incapable of feeding himself, let alone feeding and caring for a child.
That would not be based upon looking at the future. That would be based on the current status of the child. I see that as something quite different.
Your Honor, but there's been no harm to the child yet, so one could argue
that
it is based upon the future.
That's a dependency idea.
And just as here, these parents are unfit to parent at the present time, because there's been a finding that they're unable to parent, so too in that case is a parent unable to parent. I don't know if I'm answering your question.
Yeah, but you were saying that the parent had the IQ of 50, right?
Yes, okay. Yes. Again, the standard for summary judgment is that there's no genuine issue of material fact. In this particular case, I would say it's no genuine issue of material fact that by a preponderance of the evidence that the parents are unable to provide proper parental care for the child or are unable to give the child an environment that is not injurious. Your Honor, I would reserve the rest of my time for the guardian ad litem.
Your Honor, Sharon Plettner, attorney registration number 24872.
Ms. Plettner, I gave Mr. Leibowitz an additional 3 minutes of time, so I'm going to ask the bailiff to add 3 minutes to the clock so that you have some additional time as well.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. Your Honor, and to be quite honest with the court, Ms. Judge has touched on a number of the items I would have already touched on. I was the guardian ad litem in the previous case, so I'm very familiar with the history of the other three children. And I do feel that it was appropriate to move forward in summary judgment in this case, considering what was going on at the time this case began, considering what was not occurring for the other three children involved. And although at the time of termination, the children were 9, 3, and 1, that is not what they were at the time the case started. It was a newborn, it was a 2-year-old, and it was an 8-year-old. These parents had the opportunity prior to our involvement to demonstrate their ability to parent, and they could not do it as was borne out in that case. They had 15 months of that case to demonstrate an ability to parent with adequate counsel, support services, and they could not do it. So here we come at the end of that case, and at no point in 15 months, or as Ms. Judge pointed out, in the 9 months respondent mother was pregnant, was there any change in any demonstration of their ability to parent? I understand counsel said, well, dad had a job for a period of time, and I put that on the record. However, that's not the reason that there was a termination of parental rights of the other three children, and it wasn't even a basis for summary judgment. Dad's employment was not an issue. It was these parents' ability to take care of their previous children, and then their inability at the exact same time that this child was born shows an inability to care for this child. And I understand we're focusing on the parents' rights here and their right to due process, but these cases are designed to look at children and protecting children and to not put this child in a position of being safe from the outset is not what we are charged to do. And so I believe that it was appropriate to file summary judgment. I believe that there are no disputed issues of fact, and I don't believe that either respondent parent cited anything in any of their responses, provided any documentation, any affidavits or evidence that would actually show there should be a genuine issue of material fact, There was no indication of improvement in parenting. There was no documentation of employment or housing. There was nothing to indicate that respondent mother had done the court-ordered psychological evaluation or that respondent father had followed through with any of the recommendations in the previous case. There was no change. So on that basis, to do anything other than move forward with a summary judgment doesn't make sense. I cannot think of one fact the parents would present at an adjudication hearing that would have changed the outcome. And I understand there was a question about could a jury trial have made a difference. I don't believe so. I don't believe that any reasonable person sitting there would have found that parents who had 15 months to parent their children and chose not to, 15 months of supportive services from the department and chose not to honor those, any parents that would have done that would be any different in this brief 6-day period of time between when adjudication or termination was entered and the summary judgment motion was filed. That's all I got.
Thank you, Ms. Plattner.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Ms. Judge, and thank you, Mr. Leibowitz and Mr. Pullen. The matter is deemed submitted, and you can expect a written opinion to issue in due course.